scaring the hell out of me. My name's Earl, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Yeah, that's right, get me weeping uncontrollably right out of the gate. That's a good idea. I'd like to thank the committee for an absolutely wonderful weekend. And when I wake up, I'll do that. It's like 6:30 in the morning for me. I don't have a lot to say at 6:30 in the morning except, you know, coffee. Which they don't allow in here. So I have water. And a great deal of fear-driven energy. So thank you to the committee. Thank you, Tom, for you were a great host. It's you let me sleep and wander around. I mean, you know, you go some places and they call you, you know, like 5 o'clock in the morning. You know. Want to see the city? Oh, no, no. I want to sleep. So it's really been nice, and everybody that I've met's been really kind, and it's been a wonderful experience. And, you know, just seeing Polly sitting over there means a great deal to me. Polly's been a good friend to me for a long, long time, and I feel very loved by you, which is a very difficult thing for me to feel. So thank you for everything that you are and that you've been to so many people in this program. I'm honored to call you a friend of mine. I talk about Clancy, but he's not here. He's here. He's still here. It's reverberating in the room from head to head. Anyway, I'm an alcoholic. I did not start drinking until I was 12. I held off as long as I possibly could. I had been restless, irritable, and discontented for a long time prior to that. Just, you know, if there was just something wasn't right with the world, you know, just, you know, they just couldn't figure it out. Something was wrong. You know what I mean? And at 12 years old, they went and did an IQ test on me, and like a 5.5-hour exam I took to get into this boarding school. And I didn't know that's what it was for. I just was being tested again, you know. When you're an odd child, that seems to happen a lot, you know. And it turned out I had a very high IQ. I don't have it anymore, so I'm not bragging. That took care of that around 17. Just and they shipped me off to boarding school, and it was a traumatic experience for me. And I met I was the smallest and the youngest kid of 250 boys. They'd scoured the earth to find 250 of the brightest, most disturbed young men they could find. You know, and it's like Lord of the Flies in this joint. And I met Tiny, and Tiny's the biggest guy, and I'm the littlest guy, and we had a fight, and I got, you know, annihilated, and went back to my room, and was just thinking my life sucks. And then Matt came around and said, "You want to smoke a joint?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And I didn't even know what he was talking about. I mean, all I heard, this is 1964, man, all I heard was, "Do you want to come with us?" And the answer was, "Yeah." I felt like I was alone. And we got picked up Steve on the way, and Steve had a container full of cheap red wine. Cheap red wine. No grapes involved, red wine. And we drank and we smoked, and I didn't get it. And then I just look at these two total strangers, two 13-year-olds and a 12-year-old, and it happened. That thing that makes me bodily and mentally different from my fellows occurred, man. I was comfortable standing where I was standing, doing what I was doing with the people I was doing it with, and I never felt like that before in my life, ever. And I don't know, is it the pot, is it the wine, is it the fact that I'm standing here with my two very close personal friends, Matt and Steve? Yeah? So I'm feeling that connection, right? And I don't care. Nobody died that night. Nobody went to jail. Nobody went to the nut house. I mean, all those things were gonna happen. But they didn't happen right there. So my experience in that moment was, smoke a little weed, drink a little wine, feel better than you've ever felt before in your life. No downside. Get up the next morning, go on about your business. I'm in. You know, I made a commitment. I need to do this as often as I possibly can. And I did every day for the next 16 years, no matter what. And I think that no matter what part's what separates me from the problem drinker. Problem drinker, you give them a good reason to stop, they do. Problem drinker gets another drunk driving charge, goes before the judge. The judge says, you know what, I'm sick of you. See you one more time, you're doing a year. We'll talk about it after the year. Problem drinker hears that and says, well, I don't want to go to jail. Makes a decision to stop drinking and driving and actually can follow through with that decision. Me? I wonder what it's going to be like in jail because I'm going. Because, you know, I can do the same thing as a problem drinker. Like Clancy talked about, you know, we look a lot alike, problem drinker and an alcoholic. The difference is that a problem drinker, given a good reason to stop, makes a decision to do so, and then is able to act upon that decision, actually stops drinking and driving. I look exactly the same as that guy, right up until the point where I have a couple of cocktails, you know, and I feel the need to go somewhere. Right? I can't follow through on the thing. Anyway, I mean, that was my information real early in the game. 13 was pills. The only reason I took a pill is somebody said, would you like a pill? I said, yes, I would. 20 minutes later, I'm laying on the floor. I'm very happy there. 14 was psychedelics, you know, drinking and dropping. I'm a child of the 60s. You know, we were very, very focused on the drugs. You know, our parents were the alcoholics, and we were carving out our own identity here. You know what I mean? We weren't going to drink ourselves to death like they were. We were going to kill ourselves in a whole new way, right? And the truth about that is this, and I tell you, my name's Earl, and I'm an alcoholic, and the reason that I talk about drugs is it's just the truth of my story. But the facts of the matter are this. The drugs had come and go. My drug of choice is, what do you got? Right? I mean, it's all anti-Earl medication to me, you know? I prefer alcohol, heroin, barbiturates. These are a few of my favorite things. You know what I mean? Mighty of a good night sitting around checking my pulse. Just... I don't need a window. I don't need a woman. I don't need a television. I'm just right in here. You know? But if you don't have any of those, I'll take a big bag of the cocaine. I'm perfectly, let's just drive the freeways decoding license plates, you know what I mean? You know, it's just, but I mean, because the fact of the matter is, it's not up or down that's the point. The point is, I got to get out of right here, right now. And right here, right now, I'm self-centered, I'm afraid. Right here, right now, I'm restless, I'm irritable, I'm discontented, and I can't live in this moment. I have to get out of right now. And that's ultimately what I'm robbed of. Yeah, as an alcoholic, is the moment, being in the moment. I can't be in the moment. It's way too much for me. I need to medicate that right away. And in the end, for me, you know, the drugs were irrelevant. I mean, the bad boy's alcohol. Anybody who's done it all knows that. You know, I can get a $300 heroin habit and go sit on the couch with a, you know, a box of candy bars, a carton of cigarettes, some orange juice, a bucket and a blanket, and a remote control, man. I'll ride that bad boy out. You know what I mean? You get a couple quarts of Jack Daniels going a day and try that, you'll convulse to death on the couch. That's the worst kick I ever had in my life, alcohol. Ugh, I'll get to that. But anyway, 15 was just shooting drugs. The only reason I shot a drug is because a very attractive young woman came up to me and said, would you like me to stick this in your body? And I said, well, yes, I would. And she did, and I went, and on the way down, all I was thinking was, if I'm not dead, I'm doing that again, because that was great. Sixteen went to the nut house. Already, 16, a guy called me an alcoholic, and I said, what's your point? You know, if this is what you call an alcoholic, then fine. I'm an alcoholic. But if you think I'm changing one thing I do just because you're calling me that, you're out of your mind, man. I mean, we wouldn't even be having this conversation if I hadn't had a few belts. You know what I mean? It's how I get out of the house. It's how I breathe. It's how I talk to other human beings. It's how I'm in the game at all. I can't do it without it already by the time I'm 16 and a half years old. 20, I got diagnosed with malignant cancer, flew me back to L.A., did major surgery on my upper back, prepared me to die. They said, you need to get your affairs in order. And I just started laughing. I said, I'm a 19-year-old alcoholic drug addict. I don't have any affairs. I got to make like a couple of phone calls and we're good to go. You know what I mean? Hello, I will not be paying you back the money I owe you. Oh, man. You should see the inside of my head right now. I like just woke up. Anyway, the hell was I talking about? So 20 years old, malignant cancer, you know, nuclear, you know, surgery. They called it nuclear medicine back then. I did that for a while. I'm a long-term cancer survivor. 22, we were putting the family back together, and we're flying to Guadalajara. On the way there, the plane crashed, and mother, father, little sister all died in the crash. And I woke up on a mountain in Mexico and renounced God. Said, I have no use for a God of this type, you know, let something like this happen. And some guys came up and they scavenged the plane wreck. And I had no more love for you either. I was out of the game. Had no love of God, no love of man. I'm out. Got off that mountain, got smuggled out of Mexico by some friends of mine. Friends. Some associates. I love how drug dealers talk about their associates. It's ridiculous. By a bunch of, you know, immoral, right, loose cannon maniac guys that I knew. Smuggled me out of Mexico. I ended up in a hospital in Santa Monica, California for a long time. Arm was crushed, leg crushed, skull fractured, back broken in three places. I was just busted from head to toe, broke a lot of bones. And I came out of there strung out on Demerol and as crazy as I've ever been in my life, man. I had pictures in my head I knew I couldn't live with. I knew I couldn't live with the stuff that I had seen. I had no idea how to resolve anything. I'd been, you know, under the influence since I was 12 years old. So that whatever emotional growth process normal human beings go through, I hadn't been going through it for a decade already. So I had no tools to deal with what was going on inside me at all. Just this crazy, angry, lunatic, isolated kid. And I hit the ground running, man. And I had one tool for living, and it was drink and use. And I hit it hard. And I did that for the next 6 years, no matter what. I was sober on three different occasions. I'd go into this bootleg sanitarium in Hollywood where you had to know the guy who knew where it was this week, you know. And you go in and talk to the nurse, right? And you give the nurse 150 cash and they'd strap you to a gurney, shoot you full of anticonvulsants and let you rock for 72 hours. You just kick like a dog. And I remember the last time I did that, I reintroduced myself to the God I had forsaken. And I said, you know what, you get me out of this sane and alive, because both seem to be up for grabs, and I'll never drink or use again as long as I live. And I meant that with every fiber of my being. Every fiber of my being. I got up off that gurney, and that nurse said, Earl, you know you're an alcoholic, don't you? And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, you know, for you to drink or use is just complete madness. You haven't been getting high for years, man. You're just feeding the beast. And I said, yeah, I know. And she said, so now armed with this knowledge, you're going to be a good boy. You're not going to drink or use anymore, are you? And I said, hell no. Not an idiot. Got up off that gurney and walked out to my car and threw down 50 milligrams of Valium because I was shaking like a dog and it seemed to me that Valium was medically indicated. And I came to 4 days later in a different city wondering how it happened. See, I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew that. I'm all right with that. But I didn't have any idea what alcoholism was. I didn't really know what I was up against. And if you're anything like me, you're out there hitting it the way we hit it, and you're thinking, man, I don't want to kick again. I mean, what I'm worried about is the kick. I don't want to kick. I'll get high for two more years just to avoid the kick. Right? And when I do finally face that, the physical detox, when I come out of there, I'm thinking, well, you know, I feel better. I feel a lot better. You know? Pretty soon, I'm actually sleeping more than an hour a night. You know, body functions are returning to normal. I'm having actual conversations with other people. Not long ones. But, you know, pretty good for me. How are you? I'm good. How are you? All right, let's stop there. I'm not good at anything beyond that. And anyway, I just used till I was dead. You know, I came out of my last, I drank for 2 more years after I got out of that last detox because I couldn't stop drinking. At the end of that 2 years, I came to and both my hands were broken. They were deciding whether or not to charge me with attempted murder. You know, I had hair out like this and a beard like this. Just lunatic, crazy, 74 broken bones, 650 stitches in me, stabbed twice, shot at, family's dead, got no friends, got no place to live. I mean, it's burned to the ground, you know what I mean? There was absolutely, as I scanned the horizon of my life, there was no place I could look and go, well, we're doing pretty good over here. Let's just focus on that. You know, I was gone. There was nothing left. And I had what we call in here this moment of clarity where I recognized that I was not connected to another human being on the face of the earth. And that was the direct result of my actions, my behavior, my alcoholism. God didn't do this to me. My father didn't do this to me. Interpol didn't do this to me. This is on me. And if I didn't want to die, I was going to have to find a new way to live. And I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know what that meant. I just threw up my these busted paws and I just said, help. And they took me by ambulance to a place and they pumped my stomach and they said, get him out of here, he's going to die. And they took me to another place and they kept me for 5 days and I got worse. And they took me to another place, this Long Beach General Hospital under the care of a Dr. Vicky Fox. And everybody on the West Coast, I mean, they know who Polly knows. She was something, man. She was the Georgia peach. I mean, she was the kind of person where she walked in a room and everybody went, oh. You just noticed her right away. She had this hair piled up on her head, you know, with like a pencil stuck in it. She wore glasses that were hanging on a chain and a sweater. Always wore a sweater. And she always had files under her arm. And she'd put a cigarette in the corner of her mouth and light it and just leave it there. You know? The ashes down the sweater and on the file. And I'm in this detox. This detox was just Dante's Inferno, man. I mean, it was 42 guys in one room with 21 cots on each side of the room with sheets drawn between them. And how you earned your cot was you got in it, you stayed there, you kicked. You know, you had a seizure, they hit you with anticonvulsants, stabilize your vital signs, throw you back in the cot. You just, it's just not a pretty picture in this joint. Nobody ever swung by and said, how you feeling, Earl? You all right? You know, because I mean, they knew how I was feeling. Just holding on to the cot, trying not to just buck right up out of the van. Nobody slept, like you're going to sleep anyway. You know? And I remember she came walking in. Dr. Fox came walking into the detox. We're all just in there, you know, just shuffling around, barking, and somebody's freaking out on it. And I'm sitting in a chair just, oh, Jesus, you know what I mean? Just hanging onto the chair. And she came walking in, and she looked around the room, she looked right at me, and I was like, I stopped breathing. Just, and she looked right at me, and she walked over, and she put her hand on my cheek, and she said, and I quote, baby, you really do need to be here. It was like my first direction, you know what I mean? I just kind of went, yeah. It was like she was talking to a dog, you know what I mean? She just kind of looked at me, and she went, stay. It was like the perfect way to talk to me, man. I was like, all right. And I stayed in there for 47 days, kicking and doing all the stuff that we do. And at the end of it, this guy, Ray White, God bless him, man. God bless him. And he said, Earl, you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. If you don't want to die, you better go to AA. It's the only chance a guy like you has. Now, I'm grateful to that man for the rest of my life because that's the only thing he could have said to me. If he had said, Earl, we got a couple of options for you. Dead man, right there. Two choices, really? Just, it was like, Earl, alcoholic, bad. Go AA now. All right. You know, I mean, it's like, too loud in here, too crazy. If you started chatting away, it just freaked me out. I don't understand what you're saying at all. Earl, how are you? I don't know. What's going on? Don't know. Starting to aggravate me now. So I ended up in the basement of a church on a Friday night, 8:30 p.m. A&A meeting. Going to A&A. Here we go. Lucky us. Going to AA. Sat in the back of the room, arms folded, best tough guy look on my face, mad dogging everybody. Just, you know, and people looking at me, you know, like newer guys were looking at me going, Jesus. The old timers were just like, yeah, we've seen lots of him. You know what I mean? They knew exactly what to do with me. They knew. You don't just like come running up on a guy like that because we're a little jumpy. They like from a distance that, glad you're here, coffee's over there, get yourself a seat. Good luck with all that over there. You know? Which was the perfect way to talk to me. It's like, yeah, screw you too, I'll get some coffee. You know? Because I'm not a tough guy or a bad guy. I never have been, I never will be. What I am is a self-centered, frightened alcoholic. And when you come up, you're going to start doing stuff I've watched other people do all my life. You're going to start chit-chatting with me, and I just don't chit-chat. I don't know how to chit-chat. I can't do it. It makes me very, very nervous, because you'll say, it feels like tennis to me. It's like you hit the ball over at me, and it's just like, you know, how are you? Jesus, I'm good. You know what I mean? I don't, it's like, you know, and I'm thinking, there. Don't do that again. Don't hit it back. Because it just gets deeper and deeper. Now you're going to go, how was your day? What day? Jeez, go away. You know, old timers are watching this going, this is going to be fun. This is. And I remember, and they said, so I sat in the back and like this guy started, got up to share. And I remember thinking, what? You know, and he talked openly and honestly about his feelings as a man. And he did it with this grace and a dignity that I'd never seen before. I'd never seen anybody look like that and feel like that saying those things. It just made no sense to me at all. It's just, that's not what it's like out there. And I just thought, man, that is weird. But and I didn't get a lot of it, but it was that feeling, that sense of things that came from him that I thought, this is different. This is different. And then it was like he looked right at me and he said, I don't care whether you like what I got to say or not. You don't like it, go to another meeting. And I thought, that's cool. Love that. Because it made it clear to me he's not selling me something. If I want it, I can have it. It's for free. If I don't want it, go to another meeting. Maybe you'll hear somebody else that you can identify with, and good luck with that. And I thought, this is cool. I'm coming back. And I've never left after that. I mean, I drove home, cried all the way home, paced in my little one-room apartment, right? Got an hour's sleep, got up and hit it again. You know what I mean? Just trying to get to bed without drinking and using, because you said one day at a time. And I took it seriously. I took that seriously because I thought, maybe I can do that. Maybe I can get the, you know, bed sober tonight. Maybe I can do that. And it would just one day, and like, oh, one day. And it was just painful and slow and grinding. And then it was day two. You know, it's like, oh. And one of the greatest things I ever heard from a guy was he came up to me after a meeting and he looked at me and he was just dead serious. The guy's about 26 years old. He'd been drunk since he was, you know, 5. Who knows? And he comes up to me and he said, seriously, kind of concerned. And I said, what's going on, man? He goes, I had no idea days were so long. I say, yeah, man. You're awake for the whole thing. It's just a stretch, isn't it? And then I heard this, somebody said, you got to get a sponsor. And I said, all right, what's sponsor? And I said, sponsor somebody who's got what you want. And I said, I would like to drink. Which makes perfect sense, you know what I mean? It's not like you come running into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and they go, you're an alcoholic? And you say, yes. And suddenly all the heat turns down. It's just not what happens. Because see, I was always worried about the kick. You finished the kick, you did the hard part. Incorrect. You know, you do the kick, I feel better, but then better turns into not so good. And not so good turns into, this is not any fun. Which turns into, oh my God. Which turns into the immediate need of relief. And I only know how to get that one way. Right? I didn't know that the obsession of the mind, the greater aspect of my illness, was in full effect. Me sitting in an ANA meeting, I'm sitting in the back. Physical phenomenon of craving, gone. Right? Now most people say, no, I've had the physical phenomenon of craving sober. I said, well, actually, I think that's the obsession of the mind. Have you ever been in a love affair and then the love went bad and you were so emotionally despondent that it physically hurt? Yeah, that's the mind doing that. It hurts, right? Same thing with the drinking and using, man. Physical phenomenon of cravings relieved for me when I finished my detox, you know, which can take a long time. Most people think, oh, I was in the hospital for 3 to 5 days and I finished my detox. No. You've just become ambulatory. You have not finished your detox. Because I remember 4 months in this meeting, sitting in meetings and just going, what? Oh. That was out loud, wasn't it? What I love is the guy, be sitting around in a group in a meeting, and you'll hear some guy, a new guy in the back go, do you see that? To somebody else, and I think, I like, get him, I like that guy. Because the other guy's going, see what? Tweaking in the back of a meeting, man, I did a lot of that. What's that guy talking? Somebody would say to me in the back of me, be a speaker, and I'd be looking right at the speaker the whole time. Some guy go, what do you mean by that? And I'd think, I don't even know what he said. How would I know what he meant by it? Just trying, man, trying. I mean, that's that victory of a newcomer sitting in an AA meeting. You know what I mean? You know, I remember having some, you know, a little bit of time and taking this guy sponsored to a meeting because Al was talking. And Al's it, man. I mean, Al throws those pearls of wisdom out just left and right. You know what I mean? And I take my guy, Louie. And Louie, we're sitting there in a meeting and Al's throwing it down, and I'm thinking, this is amazing that I get to be a part of this, that I get to be a part of this human chain of Alcoholics Anonymous, where I bring Louie to Al, I've come to love and respect, and Louie that I love and adore, and I bring them together, and Al talks in the meeting and just showers Louie with the pearls of wisdom. This is fantastic. It's not what's going on. Louie and I are having fundamentally different meetings. Louis's got 90 days, I got a few years. We're having a different meeting, you know what I mean? We're looking at it from completely different angles. And I got to remember me, and I think it's incumbent upon all of us to try to remember what we were like new, to give that new guy a shot, you know? Because I take the perspective I have now, and I try to lay it on a new guy, and he just looks at me like, okay. Are we going to eat soon? You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, I remember me sliding up on Ohio Street, Saturday night Ohio Street, man, brand spanking new, driving up and just going, there it is, I found it, good. We go in, put the keys on the chair. You know, that's how you do it around here. We'll put the keys on the chair and everything will be fine. I'm going to put my chin in the chair. Where would I sit? There's a guy with a red coat. Sit next to the guy with the red coat. Put your keys on the chair next to the guy with the red coat. We're going to be okay. I'm fine. People are coming. How you doing? Fine. Okay, they're ringing the bell. I got to sit down. Good. How you doing? Great. Stop talking to me. Great. All right. Guy's talking, he's talking, he's down. I have no idea what that guy said. Another guy's up. He rarely saw something. 12 things. Rarely saw something. 12 things. ABC. He's down. 12 things, ABC. I got it. I'm good. He's down. This guy, he's up. He drank like that. Hey, that guy's great. I drank like that. That guy's great. I love that guy. He's down. I love that guy. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I talking out loud? I'm sorry. He's down. They're passing a basket. Don't take the money. Oh. Everybody's getting up. We're going outside. Where are we going outside? We're smoking. I smoke. We'll smoke. I smoke. Okay, good. Good, good. They're ringing the bell. Ringing the bell. Going back in. They're going back in. Going back in. Where's the guy? I got to sit down. Got to find the seat. Where's the guy with the red coat? Red coat! Where's the guy with the red coat? Good, good, good. Fine, fine, fine. Right. They're reading 12 more things. That's not the same 12 things. 24 things ABC. 24 things ABC. This guy's, yeah, Peter, I drank like that. I drank like that. I felt like that. I felt like that. This is amazing. I felt just like that. I can't believe. This guy's reading my mail. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. He's down. I love that guy. I love that guy. He's another guy. He's up. He's up. He's up. We're up. They got me. We're praying. We're praying. I know this prayer. I know this prayer. And I would leave the meeting and people would say, you know, what'd you think? I said, it's a great meeting. It's a great meeting. And I'd cry all the way home. You know what I mean? Just like, Jesus, what was all of that? It was, I'm never going to get this thing, man. I would go home and pace in my apartment. I got to find out what the 20 more things are. I got to find out. And I would get up the next morning, and people would look at me, and all they'd see was a guy sitting in a seat doing this. Just it's a testimony to the human skull, you know what I mean? How much pressure it can take. I mean, we should be sitting around in meetings like this, and every once in a while, some newcomer's head should just explode. And they have a special cleanup committee, run over and clean it all up, and I'm gonna... Oh, I gotta remember, man, that was not easy. That was not easy being new. It was just, you every time you just go home and go, what'd you do today? I got up, I went to work, I went to a meeting. Man, I'm just exhausted. You know what I mean? Because everything was so intense. And you would listen to people share. I mean, the worst thing in the world, to take a newcomer to a sharing meeting. You know what I mean? People are sharing, what'd you do? Well, I got three kids, you know, and I'm raising them on my own, you know what I mean? And I'm learning how to play the guitar, too, you know? And I'm, you know, and I got two jobs, and I'm, you know, I'm thinking of going back to school, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, I'm dead. That's unbelievable that that human being is doing. I mean, I go to work meeting, I go home, I'm like, oh my God. And I thought, this is never going to happen. I'm never going to be able to say, I work, go to A, and do anything else of any kind. It's too much for me, right? But what I've discovered is, if you're new, don't sweat it. Don't sweat it. Because when you're new, you know what I mean? That alarm goes off in the morning, you jump up and you just kind of go, ah. You know? I'm going to stay sober all day. You know, and you're grinding through every step of the way. What time is it? 9:02. Great, great, all right. I'm just doing this. I'm doing that. Oh, jeez. What time is it? 9:03. Good. All right. Got it. You're just grinding through a day. You know what I mean? It's about staying here, working the 12 steps, being relieved of the obsessive nature of the mind, walking the earth, a free man or woman, and starting to flow through a day. I mean, my schedule today, I look at my schedule today and I go, well, that's ridiculous. The amount of stuff that I can do in a day. And it's because I've learned it just, you know, I got a plan and I just do the next indicated thing. I just do the next indicated thing. And it turns into a remarkable, full, complete life. Just doing the next indicated thing. And that's all Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me is everything. It's all it's done for me. It's everything. I mean, it's given me a way to be in the world. It's given me a way to have some grace and some dignity and some purpose and some value. You know, little things. Just little things that have happened to a guy who came in here with absolutely no tools for living whatsoever. And they said, get a sponsor. And I said, what is that? They said, well, somebody who's got what you want. I said, I would like to drink. So maybe a little early to be throwing the ball back in my court. And they said, well, and I've since come to believe I want a sponsor who's got what he wants. Best definition of happiness I know, wanting what you have. All right? So I looked around and I found this lunatic. He was a lunatic. I listened to his story and I said, he's crazy. I love him. Because he'd been thrown out of the nut. He'd been the only guy I've ever met. He'd been in the nut house 23 times. Only guy I ever met who'd been evicted from the nut house. But they finally just said, you have to go. Get out. And he ended up in AA, and he'd been there for 10 years when I showed up. And he had this passion for life. That was the thing about him, the late, great Donald Mann. This passion for life that, and I wanted that. I wanted to feel strongly about something because it felt so dead inside. And I asked him to sponsor me, and he said, yes. You don't have to like what I tell you, and you don't have to think it's a good idea. You just have to do it. And I thought, all right, I don't know what that means, but okay. I found out what that meant. He would say stuff like, and he didn't tell me about Alcoholics Anonymous, he showed me. He'd say, we're going to go to Ohio Street tonight. Meeting starts at 8:30, so you'll be there at 8. I remember thinking, why? Why would I be there a half an hour early? Well, because there's going to be new people there with no place to go, and we want to be there for them and talk to them and see, make sure they've got a big book and they know where some other meetings are. Kind of just kind of bring them into the fold a little bit. I went, oh, that's very nice. All right, yeah, I'll do that. He says, and I want you to pick up Ed on the corner of 6th and Santa Monica on your way in. Going, geez, it never ends with this guy. You know what I mean? It's like, now I'm, you know, going, and I'm just a gruntled guy, and I'm going, I'm driving down to 6th and Santa Monica, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. I don't even know this guy named Ed. And for that matter, there's four corners at 6th and Santa Monica. How the hell am I going to know which guy is Ed? You know, which is funny because, you know, when you're driving to meet Ed with 6 days, you're like 2 blocks away and you go, oh, well, there he is right there. Because Ed's the guy standing on the corner doing this. That's got to be Ed. So you pull up and you go, get in, Ed. He goes, all right. Ed's in the car. We're on our way to the meeting. I'm still just this crazy new guy, right? And I got Ed with 6 days. I got like 9, 10, 12, 18 months. Who knows? I mean, and we're driving along and Ed's going, hey, well, how you doing? I'm Ed. And you know, and I, you know, I got 6 days and my wife took me back and I got my job back and we're going to get a car and we're going to. And I always look at him and I go, shut up, Ed. You got 6 days and you're already doing better than me. I hate you. they're once again displaying my magnificent social skills. And I said, yeah, I'm going to take you to the meeting. We're going to have a meeting. If you need a ride anywhere at the meeting, I'll take you. But knock it off, folks. It's like, all right. And we go to the meeting, and I mean, I didn't know what Donald was doing for me. I didn't know he was slowly breaking down my resistance to humanity. I didn't know that he was showing me that I could do things that I didn't understand that would reveal more and more and more about how to be in life. I didn't know that. He went so far beyond the call of being a sponsor, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, I remember one night I was homicidal, and I don't use the term loosely. I was not in a good way. Not in a good way. And I was showing up to Ohio Street, and it was an 8:30 meeting. My commitment was the cleanup commitment, because that way you don't have to talk to anybody. Just wait till they all leave, and you clean up the place and lock it up, and you're done. You're participating in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you don't have to actually talk to another alcoholic. My crackerjack plan. And I'm showing up at the meeting because I can't be alone one more second, and it's not even 6:30 yet. And the setup guys and the coffee guys and Donald are there. And I had to get there, and I had to get there fast because it was not going well in here. And I got over there, and I remember thinking, they're going to look at me, this crew, this band of misfits that Donald sponsored. He was known as the sponsor to the damned, right? Because his, you know, you could go into a big meeting, you look down the row of Donald's guys, and they stuck out in here, you know what I mean? Which is tall order. Yeah, and you know, you just people going, nice meeting. Woo, what's going on with that row? Because you got the angry nun, and you got the giant homosexual, you know what I mean? And then, you know, you got Aloma with the, you know, the earrings and the pearls and the hats, you know what I mean? Looking at you over the sunglasses, you know, what's going on? Just this weird row of guys, right? Anyway, I got to show up at this meeting, and I go, I'm going to have to hit the first guy that says, what are you doing here? That shames me, right? Because I got no place else to be. I'll just sock the first guy, and nobody will bother me anymore, right? So I'm walking in ready to punch the first guy, and Donald was at the podium, and guys are setting up and making coffee, and I come walking in the back, and he sees me, and he saw the look on my face. And he turns on the mic, and he goes, Earl, it's 6:21, and you're late. See what he did? He let everybody in the room know that he expected me to be there. That I was supposed to be there. Not that I was there because I had no place else to go. Not because I couldn't stand one more second alone with my head. He made it safe. Just like that, he knew. He knew me so much better than I knew myself. Another night, we were at Ohio Street again, same meeting, and I was standing in the back. I had 2.5 years, and I was done. Couldn't go another step. I was just imploding in the back of the room. And the main speaker was up talking, and Donald was sitting up there, and he turned around and he saw me in the back of the room, and I was just standing there, just looking at the floor, and I was just despondent. I was just despondent. I mean, I just had no defense against the pain I was feeling anymore. I couldn't fight it another second. It was just happening to me. And he got up, and he walked up to the front of the meeting, and he taps the speaker on the shoulder while the guy's talking. And the speaker just kind of goes, steps aside, and Donald goes to the microphone. He goes, Earl! And I'm in the back of the room, and I'm just... And I looked at him, and I'm going, Jesus, he's at the podium. What's going on? And he looked at me, and he said, we're having a meeting. And I went... And he just got the speaker back and sat down, you know, and the speaker's like, who the hell is Earl? What is happening here? Oh... Again, you know what I mean? It was like the kick in the ass when I needed it, you know, the loud bark, you know, or that gentle, you know, touch, you know what I mean? Just that ability to know who I was and how to handle me. And he raised me from nothing, you know what I mean? I was with him up until I was 13 years sober, up until the day he died. And it just broke my heart. I mean, I was just devastated when he died. I was with him longer than I was with my parents. You know, he's the single most important person of my life. He showed me how to be in the world. And when he died, I was just despondent. I mean, I was, you know, I didn't turn down any speaking requests. I mean, I was going out like 35, 40 weekends a year all over the world. And the only reason I was saying yes is I just wanted to go to another. I just wanted to go to one more place and tell them about that there's people like Donald Madden in the world. And that they're in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that completely worthless human beings who've done a lot of bad things come into these rooms, and Donald, guys like Donald Mann look at us and they just go, perfect, come here. And all they want to do is see the light come on in our eyes. That's their new high, man. It's like they want to see you catch the buzz. They want to see the life come back into a dead man walking, you know? And that's what he was like, you know? And if you don't... He's still a hater to me. Been dead. I'll be 27 this year. He died when I was 13. This July will be 14 years since he died. And I still, he's the guy. I mean, I got a sponsor now who's, by anybody's viewpoint, equal to Donald. You know, and they're all over the place. But you know, you got your first guy. You got your first guy, the guy who you look at and he's talking to you and you go, oh, I see what you mean about step one. That's only going to happen to you once. That pop, that first pop. That pop where you're sitting there knowing you're a hopeless alcoholic and all you're doing is killing time here. And then all of a sudden your sponsor says something to you and you think, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can have this thing. Maybe I can stay here. It's called hope. And to give a hopeless, low-bottom alcoholic hope, I mean, what better gift is there? What more valuable thing can there be, that thing that can fuel you just to go to one more meeting or just to turn to the next page in the book, just to give you enough fire to do that? That's a gift beyond anything I can just possibly describe. And I mean, and so I was staying sober, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm working the steps, and la, 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 I'm doing all this stuff, right? And started getting a little squirrely. You know what I mean? I go to this old timer and I said, listen, I'm going 7 to 9 meetings a week, never turning down an AA request, talking to my sponsor every day, sponsoring guys. I'm in the game here. I'm doing the deal. What's the deal? How come I'm a little squirrely now? What's going on? And the guy looked at me and said, Earl, I saw you come in. If you don't get a program, you're going to die. Get away from me. It's like, the hell are you talking about, old man? Blah, 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 blah. And he said, Earl, the program, you're in the fellowship. Vital to your recovery. Glad you're doing all that stuff. The program is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps are outlined in there. They will free you from the obsessive state that you are currently living in. Work a program or die. Get away from me. Fine. I got this buddy of mine and we got the book and we just said, and the guy said, oh, by the way, when you read the book, read the black part. I was like, oh, you mean I'm not supposed to like fill in the blank? No. So we got the big book, me and this buddy of mine, and we started going around looking for the big book thumpers, the guys we'd been avoiding at all costs, you know what I mean? Got those guys, and went to just Joe and Charlie, the Big Book Comes Alive workshop. Boy, that was a big pop, huh? Those guys, woo! Right? So, and we're reading the book, and it was hysterical watching us. I wish I had a camera on us. I could show them the guys that come and ask me to sponsor them. I go, okay, but here's who you're asking. Watch this guy. And we would be sitting reading the book, and I mean every 5 minutes, I would go, hey, You know that thing they say in A&A? Here it is, right here. They even kind of explain it pretty good. Listen to this. 3 minutes later, Christopher would go, hey, well, there's that other thing they say. It's right here. It's unbelievable, right? And so we read them, and I mean, what we found was there's this circle with a triangle. It's an ancient spiritual symbol, stands for mind, body, and spirit, brought together as a whole human being. And therein lies the balance I've sought my whole life, and I've never been able to find drunk or sober. Alcoholics Anonymous adopted that symbol, and it's the same stuff. Unity, service, and recovery. Same thing. Unity's the body. I bring it here. I couldn't get sober, but we seem to be able to. It's what the conference is about this year. Together we can. I couldn't stay sober, but we seem to be able to together. So I avail myself of the fellowship where I see the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous being manifested in the form of other people, in the actions that they take, in the manner in which they live. So I go to regular meetings regularly. Guys go out and get loaded and come back. I say, what happened? Invariably, they say, well, first I stopped going to meetings. I got left with my own best thinking. I think, ooh, that's a bad idea for me. I better go to meetings. Regular meetings, regularly. So I become known amongst the fellowship. So if I disappear, people go, hey, where'd Earl go? Because in my town, you can go to a different meeting every day for like 9.5 years. And when you go out and drink and dine, nobody will say a word. Nobody will give you a thought because nobody got to know you. So again, go be exposed in the rooms, get known by other people. That's what I did. Right? The recovery is of the mind, the greater aspect of my disease. The thing, because see, this is not about stopping drinking for me. That's not what this is about. I've stopped drinking thousands of times. This is about it's not about stopping, it's about how do I stay stopped. And the only way I'm going to stay stopped is if I can get comfortable sober. And the only way I'm going to be comfortable sober is if I can be relieved of the obsession of the mind, the persistence of this illusion, this belief in a lie that I can drink or use like a normal man is astonishing. It's not mildly difficult. It's astonishing. Many of us pursue it to the gates of insanity and death. And I'm a gate guy. I know it. I just got to accept that. I drink and go, let's go insane. Like I got a choice. All right? Just there we go. So the obsession of the mind has to be relieved or I'm not a free man. I'm still a slave to the alcohol and drugs. I'm sitting in meetings just, you know, and the screws are tightening. They're just tightening. And I'm resistant to what I'm hearing, and I can't identify, and I can't be a part of, and I can't let the guard down, and I can't just be with you, and it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And then it gets to the point where, you know, I drink or I put a gun in my mouth. You know? I know I won't survive the gun in my mouth. Maybe I'll survive the drink. So that's what I take. So I got to be relieved of that. How do I get relieved of the obsession of the mind? Work the 12 steps. That's what they're for. Heart and soul of this thing. Step one, what's the problem? Lack of power is my dilemma. If that's my problem, what's my solution? Step two, a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, soundness of mind, relieve me of the obsessive condition of alcoholism, the mental obsession. Having done that, knowing that, you better make a decision to do something about it. So I get out on my knees, I say the third step prayer, turn my will and my life over to the care of a God I may or may not understand. I don't understand God. See evidence of God on a daily basis. Evidence of God on a daily basis. In every moment, there's an opportunity to experience the presence of a consciousness beyond my own, a God consciousness. And it's there, and it's always there. It's always available, which is a real cool aspect of the buzz and getting sober. So no matter where you are, what I'm doing, no matter where I am or what I'm doing, if I'm in conflict or there's a dis-ease or a disharmony going on, or I don't have an answer that makes sense to me, or I can't participate on a level I think I would like to, if I stop, breathe in, breathe out, surrender, there's consciousness, there's a pop available that I can pop into something else and have amongst. A lot of times people say to me, where'd that come from? I said, beats me. Happens all the time if you're just willing to let it happen. And that's the trick, is they let getting the ego to a place where the ego will allow that to occur. That the ego's not it. Doesn't rise and fall, doesn't end with the ego. So I worked the 12 steps. 4 and 5, me. 6 and 7, God. 8 and 9, others. Nobody else to play with. That's the whole team. 4 and 5, and look at the order of these. It's fascinating. 4 and 5, me. Start with me. Swallow large chunks of truth about myself. I get real clear on where I'm standing. Because if I don't figure out where I'm at, how am I going to get anywhere? I mean, if I'm on my way to Aunt Maggie's house and I get lost and I call up Aunt Maggie and say, Aunt Maggie, I'm lost, what's the first thing she says? Where are you now? Because she can give me lots of great directions, but if she doesn't ask me where I am, they're useless to me. Lovely directions, they have absolutely nothing to do with me, Aunt Maggie. I'm over here. Right? So where am I now? 4 and 5, I swallow large chunks of truth about myself, and I get pretty well centered in that. 6 and 7 bring God right into the mix, asking God to remove the defects of character, because I will remove the wrong stuff. I'm cutting deals here. 8 and 9, clean it up with you. Clean it up. It's very, very simple. I mean, there's a lot of conversation in the book. I mean, most of the stuff you can do sitting on the couch. 1, yeah, that's the problem. 2, that's going to have to be the solution. 3, all right, down on my knees. Here you go. Back up on the couch. 4 and 5, all right, write a bunch of stuff. 5, a guy comes into the house. I read it to him. He says, good luck with all that. He leaves the house. 6 and 7, sitting on the couch. 8, making a list on the couch. 9, leaving the house. A lot of conversation in the book about leaving the house, because they know, okay, we're going to take an alcoholic armed with a little bit of information and we're going to set him loose. Very specific. I'm very, very sorry. Here's your money back in the house. And to make amends means to change. So I'm making a commitment to change in the behavior I'm having to apologize for. Pretty simple stuff. And I always had to remember when I'm paying back money, people don't want my money. They want their money. I'm giving people back their money. A part that always escaped me. Because that would require me to think of someone else. Right? 10, 11, and 12 keep me in the game. Same thing. 10, me, 11, God, 12, you. 10, I continue to take personal inventory because in that first pass, I've scratched the surface. When I'm wrong, promptly admit it because I'll fester and die if I don't. 11, I seek God through prayer and meditation. Why do I pray for it? Knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out, period. Why do I meditate? To quiet the mind so that when the answers come, I can hear them. 12, third side of the triangle. Unity is the body I bring it here. Recovery is of the mind. I work the 12 steps. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, it's the result of working these steps. Been restored to sanity, soundness of mind. I've been relieved of the obsession to drink and use. I'm walking the earth as a free man for the first time in my life. I can now be of service. Unity, recovery, service. Unity, well, the recovery's on the bottom in the picture, but you get me. Third thing I'm going to do is service. Because I've been, you know, I swallowed large chunks of truth about myself. My own house is in order. Service, how can I help? Not because I'm a good guy. Because I don't want to die drunk in the gutter, which is where guys like me end up. So I'm of service to other people. And as a result of that, I got a remarkable life. An absolutely remarkable life beyond anything. I'm married to someone I actually know. We have a house. Right? We bought a house together. I've been dragged kicking and screaming into a nice life. She said, you know, we should live together. And I said, terrible idea. Moved in. It's going well. For 9 years now. She said, we should get a dog. I said, well, you've stepped across the line with that one because, you know, that's like, you got to walk them and stuff. And I'm like, got a dog. So good. We got another one. I love the dogs. Dogs are great for humans, man. Great for humans. You want to experience, you know, unconditional love? Get a dog because you ain't getting it from another human. Best you're ever going to get from another human being is I love you fully and completely, except for this. That's a good deal from a human. But a dog, man, all you got to do is come home. You walk through the door and Lulu looks up and goes, he's back! This is fantastic! And I said, I just took the garbage out, Lulu. I was here 10 seconds. I don't care. I love it when you come through the door, man. Are we going to eat? Are we going to play ball? What's going on, man? Right now, man, that dog is in the here and now, man. Thrilled to see you. What are we doing right now? Good lessons. Really good lessons. It's like, Jesus, I don't know. Hold on a minute. Sit. She looks at me like, yeah, okay. Just they got this house, and you know how houses have like lawns and plants and all this stuff around them? You never just buy a house. You buy a house and all this stuff around it, right? So I'm looking at the house, first house I was ever in, because a house means you're actually planning on staying somewhere for a while. Big deal for a guy like me, right? We got a house and it's got a lawn and plants, and I'm looking all up and down the street, and they got like very nice lawns and very nice plants. And I'm thinking, well, crap, I gotta keep this stuff alive. You know, it's how they spot us, you know what I mean? Nice lawn, nice lawn, nice lawn, dead lawn. There they are. Right? It's like, ooh, we're exposed. And I don't want to know who's moved into the neighborhood, so I get the hose out and I'm like, you know, watering around here. I got some water on this stuff. And there's like trees on the street and the light's coming through the trees, you know, and it's hitting the plants and the water's doing that little sparkly prismatic thing that it does, you know, and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of cool. Look at it, and all of a sudden it hits me, you know, if I'm not mistaken, plants are alive. And the plants right there, it's breathing in the carbon dioxide and out the oxygen. I, on the other hand, I'm standing right here, breathing in that very same oxygen and out that carbon dioxide. We got a little thing going on here. I'm starting to catch a little buzz now, right? I'm catching a buzz. Here's a little more for you, my brother. Here's a little more for you, my sister. You know? I'm getting into this. I'm having a good time now. Guy drives by, he sees man on lawn watering plants. That's not what's happening, bro. What's happening is there's an alcoholic drug addict on the front lawn catching a buzz with a few of his friends. That's what's going on. My wife comes out and goes, what are you doing? Because I've like flooded the front yard, you know? I said, honey, this shit's alive. She goes, great, there's some more of your friends in the backyard going back there. Yeah. But you see, that sounds like a ridiculous story, because in many ways it is. But here's the point. When I was out there drinking and using, I was dead inside. I was so dead inside. The soul had been lifted up out of me. I was dying and didn't know it. And, you know, I needed a peak experience just to feel anything. So my idea of an interesting night was hearing a bullet go by, because it took something like that for me to feel anything, right? It was a horrible, dead way to live. Getting clean, and you come in here and you get sober, newcomer. You come and you get sober. And what it says there, you know, that this is a design for living. And it goes way past not drinking and using. There are gifts in here beyond your wildest dreams. And one of the most remarkable gifts for me has been the ability to marvel in the ordinary. To be able to catch a buzz in the simplest of things. That I don't need a peak experience anymore. When we're new, we like jump out of airplanes, you know, and you know, riding motorcycles way beyond our skill level, you know what I mean? We downhill race skiing, you know what I mean? We do all these kind of things because it's still, we haven't made the emotional and spiritual adjustment, and that's the only way we can feel life. What gets good, man, is when you can catch a buzz just sitting talking to a friend. Or you can catch a buzz, I'm 26 years sober and sitting in a meeting and watching somebody with 2 days get up in a meeting and accept the big book. Or to watch that young man turn to the young woman next to him and say, here, you take the book. And he doesn't know. He's already doing it. He was just thought of her above himself, and he was of service to her. I almost started crying when the guy went, you know. He's like, dude, just keep doing that. Just keep doing that. Read this book, keep doing that. You're gonna be fine. You know what I mean? Just that. This amazing thing that happens in here. And like I said before, you know what I mean? It was down. I didn't care if it was alcohol or whatever, or going up, whatever. It didn't make any difference to me because it was about getting out of right here, right now. Alcoholism took me out of the moment, which is to rob me of my entire life, because that's the only place life can occur. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me back right now. You can get between those. Get right in there. Because that's all there is. That's all there is now. There isn't 5 minutes from now. That does not exist. There isn't 5 minutes ago. That doesn't exist. There's now. I can't love you in an hour, but I can love you now. I can't have any grace or dignity as a man or any integrity as a man in 20 minutes, but I can have some right now. This is where it has to happen, is it has to happen now. And that's exactly what the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous are all about. They're about right now. The power of this goes beyond anything any one individual could ever possibly explain. But if you stay with us, you will catch your own buzz. You will catch the buzz. You will pop into a remarkable experience of life. You will look out of your skull from a different angle. These are like my promises. You will look out of your skull from a different angle. You will catch a serious, serious buzz. You know, you will find purpose and value beyond anything you would have ever possibly imagined. You will find the passion for the day. You will intuitively, to the promises that are the real ones, you will intuitively know how to handle situations that previously baffled you. And on and on and on and on. If you go into the book, the world will explode for you. And you will, and they will find, in my opinion, we get to bump up against something that I never thought would ever be possible for somebody like me. You will know peace. It's an amazing gift. But we do it together. Can't do it alone. I've never met anybody that came in here that was an alcoholic, say, come in, get the information, go, got it, thanks, leave, and do well. Stay with us. This is a room full of dead people sitting up pretending they're paying attention to me. Right? They didn't look like this when they got here. Don't judge them by the way they look. Listen to their stories and you will find that there are some absolutely remarkable journeys in here. There's people sitting in here, I mean, I've had a crazy life. There's people sitting in here that make me look like I've been playing in the sandbox my whole life. So just stay, please stay with us and walk the journey. You know what I mean? And will more be revealed? Unavoidably so, yeah. Yeah, unavoidably so. But you know what? You're going to be all right, because there's no place on earth you're better understood than here. That has been my experience. These people loved me when I couldn't love myself, and they exposed me to so much about the world and life. See, you could come in here and we will help you build a foundation upon which you can stand a free man or a free woman. But there's no dogma here. So then we'll say, okay, go manifest that any way you want. Manifest it any way you want. Live your life. All we want is to make sure that you have that life to live. That's all. That's all we want to offer you. We will help you with a foundation upon which you, a slave to alcohol or drugs, can stand a free man or woman. To me, that's a remarkable gift, and that's what this weekend's been about for me, and it's what my life's going to be about, and for that, I love you very much, and I wish you peace. Thank you.